Hare Krishna, everyone. Good morning. Sorry that I have to give class today, but it was my duty. So I'll be continuing the saga of Varnashram, and after the previous speakers, what to do. So I'll try my best for you. I thought to review a little, but I think I'll say Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this class is again about varnas versus ashrams, because I feel like we've... Can everyone see me? Sorry, this is in the way, but what to do? We get a lot of classes about ashrams, and I don't know so much about them as well, so what to do? Yadunandana Swami, probably 3 weeks ago now, spoke about both. He kind of gave a general overview for us and gave us some of the qualities and the importance of both, highlighting that it's our psychophysical nature that we have to follow, and that the purpose of Varnashram is to create cooperation amongst the whole society. He uses this... He uses the Bhagavatam verse 1.2.13, the same that Nimai also uses. But he was highlighting that the Varnashram is the highest perfection of duty, and versus Nimai, who talks about the purpose as pleasing the Lord. Haritoshanam. This is something that we've heard this verse many times. I mean, at least I have in this temple room. And he said that varna and ashram are only secondary principles, and they're used to uphold the primary principles of the five angas of bhakti. So without the primary, then the secondary aren't useful. And with the secondary, the primary are more useful. So he said that the service of Krishna cannot be separated from serving all living beings, and that there's an intimate relationship between serving others and devotional service or chanting, and that you cannot separate the two. And of course, he mentioned that in Kali Yuga, we all have mostly mixed varnas, that people aren't typically one varna, and this creates an increase in non-focusedness, in an ability to concentrate in whatever varna we happen to be. So then the next week, we got some points from both sides, from the Madhyalila, that it points out that I'm not a Brahmana, Kshatriya, I'm not a Vaishya, Sudra, I'm not a Brahmachari, householder, Vanaprasa, or Sannyas, and I identify myself only as the servant of the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. And so we understood that actually, Lord Chaitanya rejected Varnashram in his statements, but we see he followed Varnashram in his actions. And that in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the four divisions of society or Varnashram were created by me. So there's kind of, it's a counterpoint, but it's when it's understood in the context, we see that that Krishna and Varnashram is actually accepted. And again, in the Bhagavad Gita, man can only attain perfection through performing his own work. Something that all three speakers were highlighting as the purpose of Varnashram is to find one's own work and to do it, even if they do their own work badly, it's better than doing someone else's. We heard this a few times. And then we had this nice picture of the waves. And that the gyani runs away, right? And the karmi or the karmakanda, the person doing karma yoga, is getting hit by the wave. And then the devotee is diving in. But Yadunanda Swami said that maybe even he could be surfing the wave. And I like that. So, and then Rasamandala, who's such a nice speaker, spoke about the responsibilities of the varnas and ashrams. And he gave it within the context of Bhakti Siddhanta, which is nice because we then understood that Bhakti Siddhanta actually reestablished varnashram for Vaishnavas, because previously it hadn't been so prevalent. And what Bhakti Siddhanta actually did was teach us through varnashram yukta vairagya. I mean, we got this nice story of Bhakti Siddhanta showing up at Radhakund in a Benz or something, Mercedes, I forget, some nice car and things. And he reestablished it for us, and Srila Prabhupada took on that mission. And he spoke about the different, kind of generally, he was speaking about the Western conceptions in our own culture of understanding of social systems in general, and how it's difficult maybe at first and even continuing within our process to understand what varnashram is, hierarchies, respect, different aspects that are necessary for the system to be working. And speaking about his experiences in the UK with the Hindu caste system, that, and in India in general, that pointing out that Krishna said that the varnashram is by guna and karma and not by janma. So we see again that it's by the modes and by our actions and not by our birth, which is understood. Srila Prabhupada calls Surya varnashram, or we follow Daivi, and then the other is Surya, or demoniac, which is based on janma, or how someone's what someone's born only. And and he gave us nice ideas of, again, how do you know your varna? What do you dream of doing? What do you do well, even in Maya? I like this. And that sudras are one who lament. So we can see that maybe all of us may fit in there somewhere. That in the West, we pride ourselves as being a classless society, but actually we look at it, it's not the case, that we base everything on economic status. And actually, it hasn't even been always the case here in the Western societies. And he challenged us at the end to, why not become an expert at something ourselves? And in doing this, we could serve our mission just as well or better than rejecting our own skills and inner natures. So, as you've seen, they've covered many things. So I'm going to try to bring a new light into this topic of responsibility in varnashram. And I had, I was using a few sources. In particular, I liked, obviously, our ISKCON and Society course. Those who were in our class, it's going to be a little familiar. And Ravinder Sarup's seminar here in 1997, so it was a long time ago now, and then his paper, which was also in our ISKCON and Society booklet. He kind of seems like the varnashram guru. He's kind of really studied it from different Western perspectives and everything. So I'd like to start with, because we're always having conflicts between understanding what a Vaishnava is and how we implement being a Vaishnava and our varna, kind of. I felt like Radhadesh, although we talk about this all the time, and some people may be sick of varnashram listening to it, but in other temples it's maybe not the case. I mean, I can speak from experience that my temple, we don't speak about these things, and it's definitely controversial and confusing for those who don't get regular lectures about Varnashram. And so I thought I would start with Srila Prabhupada's understanding of what a Vaishnava is, or just the context of what a Vaishnava is, so we can understand that we're kind of shooting for the stars in being a Vaishnava and in our Varnas, so we can learn some detachment. We can get knowledge and still and learn detachment from it, because it's a difficult process, both are. So Prabhupada, in a conversation in 1997, it's with a few people, Hari Swari is one of them, he says, 77, yep. So Varnashram, the Varnashram Dharma should be introduced all over the world. And then he says, Vaishnava is not so easy. The Varnashram Dharma should be established to become a Vaishnava. It is not so easy to become Vaishnava. Hari Swari says, no, it's not a cheap thing. Prabhupada says, yes, therefore it should be made. Vaishnava to become Vaishnava is not so easy. If Vaishnava to become Vaishnava is so easy, why so many fall down? It's not so easy. So it was in a bigger context. A sannyasi had fallen down, and he was trying to explain to the devotees there, I think you compiled this, that even within the Varnas, even within Varnashram, being a Vaishnava is still difficult, and vice versa, trying to be a Vaishnava without understanding Varnashram is also difficult, but it's just overall a difficult process. And he says, to be a real Vaishnava means to transcend the modes which the Varnas and the Ashrams are within. But until reaching this, you have to function within. We had this nice point about due dress that he brought up, and you can see, like, Sukadeva Goswami, for example, didn't dress, and Lord Chaitanya did, and Lord Chaitanya is our kind of the ultimate devotee role model. He represented what a devotee should be in Kali Yuga specifically, and he definitely dressed and wore sannyas cloth and got married and everything involved in Varnashram. And so we can see that we also, in some way, in our own capabilities, need to follow Varnashram. So it's something like we understand that the soul is trapped within the body, trapped if we're not conscious of it, but the body is used as a vehicle for the process of purification. And Varnashram can be understood in the same way, that it's the vehicle for the process of purification. And when we understand it like this, it doesn't seem so complicated, because the same way we're not so attached to the body, it's Varnashram, we can also understand it, use it, but we don't have to be so attached and therefore disappointed or feeling lacking for not being this or that. It's just an instrument that we use and we were given and make the best of. So from Ravindra Sarup's seminar, which was many hours, he brought up the point of vritti, which means it's one way to determine what someone's varna is. And vritti means livelihood, or how someone lives their life, the actions and the income, as Rasamanda was also pointing out. So the difference between Daivi Varnashram Dharma and Surya, which I said is the birth, and Daivi means through action. So how someone lives their life is very significant and very representative of the Varna they're within. So Brahmanas, he says, are separate from the others in the way, in the fact that they don't accept anything but charities, or this is the concept. They don't accept anything, and if they have too much of what they've been giving, then they can give it away. And he makes a joke that if you have insecurities about health insurance, then you, and financial stability, then you're probably not a Brahmana. I mean, he's talking about a single person. And he said, of course, there's Brahmanas who are Grihastha Brahmanas, and therefore they take up jobs that are also in the same mood of accepting and not trying to gain profit. So Srila Prabhupada kept saying that we need to become a brahminical society, and to understand what he means by that, if you understand the different responsibilities of all the four varnas, so the brahmanas, if they're organized, then the rest can follow. And we know this famous story of I think it was a journalist who asked Prabhupada, you know, what is he doing? And he says, you know, he came to give us all a head, because the Western society was headless. And he was referring to the brahmanas. He said he was going to give the organizational, the intelligent class, so that the rest could have someone to follow. And so when we say that we need to be a brahminical society, that's what it means. We need to be the leading society. And not necessarily that everyone is brahminical in nature, because the brahminical qualities are those also of a Vaishnava. But it doesn't mean that everyone has to be necessarily brahminical in their actions and in pujari work or whatever kind of service that it ends up being. So then the kshatriyas, in the same way, their vritti is making a living through ruling others and taxing, it says. He was saying that, and that means that they're receiving annual pay based on the rest of the society's socioeconomic positions. And the amount of money that others can give, they give to support the community and society as a whole. So the kshatriyas are also not making profit. They're making what's necessary to sustain the others. And the Vaishyas are making a living through buying natural or raw goods and reselling them for higher costs. I mean, we can understand this concept because this is what the society we live in. So the Vaishyas are vritti is through making money from others, actually making profit. And then Sudras are maintained through employment, through either kshatriya or vaishya activities. What they're doing is supporting the Sudras. And most people are the working class nowadays, and we can see that they're being supported by some company here or the government here. So Srila Prabhupada said the Varanashram does not make sense outside of an agrarian economy and in an industrial economy. And so when we try to understand it, obviously we get confused, because it's out of its place. But it doesn't mean that it's not necessary and it's not able to be implemented, because actually we're all out of our place in the material world in general, so it's not kind of a new situation for us. I really liked Ravindra Sarup. He again, this is in 1997, so I liked, he was saying, this is my theory, and now I guess we kind of just accept it as fact, because I've heard this a few times in classes, or maybe it was just from his seminar, I don't know, that people have come to this conclusion that the feudal system and Varnashram are parallels, that they were similar systems. And he says that the fall of the Christian church in a broad sense, and the rise of capitalism was the Western's kind of parallel to the fall of the Brahmanas in India. And I like this because it was very recent, actually, in history, and we were learning this in school, in elementary school. And I remember hearing about the serfs, because I always thought it was a funny word. And he compares each class to the four classes: the kingdom and the serfs and the priests and of the church, and then says that because of the fall, the Sudras again were not protected, and the Vaishyas kind of took over. And we see that today, as the other speakers pointed out, the capitalism is the reigning social system. No, capitalism is the governmental system, but the social system is commercialism. I mean, based on capitalism, of course, naturally. So, Srila Prabhupada also, speaking in the same context about the fall of the church, he blames that the fall of the brahmanas in the sanctioning of sati. We know what sati is, the women go into the fire, and even the partition of India. He says that it's all the brahmanas' fault. And he was making the joke that the Indians are blaming the British for the break of India and Pakistan, but Srila Prabhupada blames the Indians for the breakup of their own country. And he said he probably didn't make many friends saying this. And he said that the partition of India was easy because the Muslims came in and took, basically converted the Sudra class who were being exploited by the Brahmanas and who weren't being protected. And to this day, the Muslim and Hindu tension is still there, and they had no problems kind of taking the people that didn't feel part of the society, didn't feel protected by it. So, running out of time. I'll go quicker, sorry. So the responsibility, this is the essence of the class. Responsibility is dharma. We can understand duty, responsibility, synonyms of each other. But what is responsibility? How I see it is, if there's a system already in place, say, like Radhadesh is quite a stable temple and community, what you do in Radhadesh is you don't try to implement new systems and create your own kind of ways of doing things. It's working. No, it's working, and it has its function. So instead, what you do is you protect or you take care of the already working functioning system. And that's what Varnashram is. It's a completely working, God-given function. And so instead, if we see it in that way, we understand that naturally then our responsibility is to protect it. And I like this word protection, because Urmila Mataji brought it up in our ISKCON Society class, and it made everything make more sense of the connections and the relationships between the four varnas, because sometimes it feels like they're individual and they don't really have anything to... I mean, they have things to do with each other, but then the sudras kind of get left out. It feels like this is my own perspective. And when you understand that everyone is actually protecting the system, protecting themselves, protecting their spiritual, religious values, then it makes more sense. So I have a very unclear poster back there, if you can see. And in the middle, it says protection. And the top, it says B. That's brahmanas. So, as you can see, I'll go through it and you can see it. The brahmanas, who are the advisors, meaning they're the ones in knowledge. Therefore, knowledge is what they protect. And this means that at all costs, to give, receive knowledge, and knowledge meaning the truth, the reality, is their priority. So what this implies is that brahmanas can't be bought. They believe in the truth, and you can't buy them out. So obviously brahmanas won't be in politics, because that's the way politics work. There are different parties, and one side is always competing for the other in different kinds of ways of buying money or agendas. So we see that brahmanas kind of separate themselves from society, in a sense, in that they're not able to be manipulated by the other classes, because they're at the top with the knowledge. So, and in this sense, therefore it implies if they can't be bought, they keep themselves in poverty because no one can be in control of them. So, Grihastha Brahmanas obviously are existing, and they work and get payment through the sciences or the of the Veda, different Ayurveda doctors, different things is what she was mentioning. And again, they're using knowledge to get their income, but they're not being bought by it by others. So the Kshatriyas are the governmental, martial, ruling, managerial class, and they have the power as rulers to control other classes, including to some extent the Brahmanas, but it's a superficial control. They don't necessarily control them. The Brahmanas are their advisors, so you can see who's actually, in a sense, controlling. But the Kshatriyas are, therefore, as they're controlling others, they need to protect the people. So, as such, they need to protect their interests, their needs, their maintenance. And that's why Kshatriyas or governments are supposed to provide hospitals and housing, marriage, and even different social necessities so that the people feel protected and feel taken care of. And then the Vaishyas, it's always wealth, but we often hear Vaishyas are supposed to take care of the cows. And when you hear this, you think, what is this? What does this businessman have to do with the cows? But when you understand it as protection, I'm sorry, it's really funny to me. I always hear the cows, and I'm always thinking this guy in a shop with the cows, and I don't see the point. But the Vaishyas generate and provide wealth for the society. They're entrepreneurs and business class, so they have control over the raw goods, over the organization, transport, the cost of these goods, and of the wealth of society. And I like that Rasamandala was going into this, because he was saying that the wealth of society is ghee, it's wool, it's cows, it's gold, it's metal, it's grains. So when you understand that they're in control of the wealth of society, then cows come into play. And you see why. They're in control of the cows. And if they're in control of the cows, then naturally they should be protecting the cows. Sorry, it was a realization for me. And they're protecting the natural resources and the animals. And it's for their own goods, obviously. Their own desires. They want to naturally protect them because they're using them to create their wealth. But also because of the society runs in this way. If they're protecting them, then the others don't have to worry about natural resources and the environment. If businessmen today were worrying about the environment, then we'd have a lot easier time. Then we come to the Sudras, who are the artisans, craftsmen, workers, who make their livelihood by means of skills. And therefore, they have control over the quality and the type of products that are created to some extent. And although they're more dependent on the other classes than the other three, because they're making things based on their necessities, but also we see that they have the creativity and the skills to do these things that the other three don't. And I remember growing up, I always thought, I don't have any skills, and I didn't understand what was wrong with me. And I was never really good at anything. And people in high school, you worship these who are good at sports or good at this. And, you know, this person is an artist. And I always was like, man, this life is so unfair, and I'm not good at anything. And and we see that some people just aren't good at things because it's not necessarily what they're supposed to be doing. I'm not an artist, so horrible. So you can see that there are people who are naturally artistic. And I like the word artist. When I think of a sudra, I think of an artist, and not in a negative context at all. But they're the ones who have control, who are skilled in hand and body, dancers, painters, things like this. And and what she pointed out, which was really nice, because it really shows the necessity of all four, and also the importance of the sudra, who are always kind of not given much credit, is if you can see, S equals art. They're in control of keeping art pure. And what you consider pure is in a religious or spiritual God consciousness. And if we look at it in today, we see modern art, movies, for example. We can even see in our own, maybe not art my generation, but maybe my parents' generation, that art, movies, for an example, were more pure. And we see the degradation of it, even in Bollywood. And we see that Bollywood, that artists, that artists aren't understanding that they are to protect and keep these this aspect of society, which is completely necessary. The arts are necessary to society. That's how you know a society is wealthy. And craftsmanship, we see it's been thrown out the window. And this affects the entire system. And I tried to make it in a circle because I feel I feel like, well, I understand that the four are connected to each other and give from each other and take from each other, kind of in a balanced wheel sort of thing. So the Brahmanas take care of truth or knowledge, which keeps the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas and Sudras in their rightful duty, and advising the ruling class who directly, they advise the ruling class directly, who then indirectly pass on the knowledge to the rest of the Varnas. The Kshatriyas rule through respect and trust, because they'll take care of the rest of the other classes, and again are doing this through the knowledge of the Brahmanas. The Vaishyas take care of the natural resources and environment, and in doing this, it kind of seems out of context that a business end would care about the environment, but we understand, as I won't get to, I think, that if through training and through schooling and education, that naturally a Vaishya would take care of the environment. It would just hurt himself if he's exploiting natural resources. It doesn't help him in the long run even. So we see that the first three are given rigorous training, actually, so that they understand the positions to the extent and the importance that they have on the rest of the society. And so if they're not given this, obviously, the degradation starts at the top and works its way downward. And then again, the Sudras take care of the arts, and which affect the entire society. We see now that American culture is Hollywood, and they're determining through what they deem art, because they have the skills. I mean, we see people who are naturally actors and actually dancers and all these things, and they have the singers. They have these skills, and they're not understanding their role, their responsibility of having them. I don't know how much time. Okay, I'll just go quickly over these because I don't have to go in detail. So if they understand what they protect, then they also provide. Brahmanas provide wisdom and guidance. Kshatriyas, peace and order and care. And Vaishyas, wealth. And Sudras, the arts. Their interest, therefore, Brahmanas is for truth. Kshatriyas, morality. Vaishyas, again, wealth. They always have wealth. And Sudras, in pleasure, in providing pleasure for others. And their weaknesses. Brahmanas, it's pride. Kshatriyas, it's anger. Vaishyas, it's greed, and then Sudras, lust. And it might seem so simplistic, but if you go further into it, you can understand how each of these weaknesses will affect the other parts of the society. And some obvious but not so obvious notes of the social dynamics, the systems dynamics, is if a society of Brahmanas, as we can see, are kind of, it's kind of a separate, because they base everything on knowledge and they're not so much concerned with people. And it's not in a negative sense, it's just that they understand, they're looking at the truth of reality. This is kind of our conclusion of our ISKCON society class. We had many realizations. So the Brahmanas are thinking about morality and ethics and not people. And therefore, we can see in ISKCON in general, if we only have these in the rigid sense, brahmanas and not kshatriyas, then the people are not taken care of. And if the people aren't taken care of, then they obviously don't stay. So direct management is done by kshatriyas and not brahmanas. And that seems often in the scriptures we see in the sastra, because kshatriyas are in the mode of passion, and they're able to do these interpersonal relationships to use the mode of passion for this. And the brahmanas aren't able in the mode of goodness. They're not able to do this as easily. So it's natural that the brahmanas want to stay away from directly managing. They want to just give advice and let the kshatriyas decide what's necessary. So we can see just from these two varnas that in ISKCON we were talking about this in the context of understanding the structure of ISKCON, what's kind of things we can not necessarily implement, because some places it's an individual decision for temples. It's not maybe an overall governmental system, but that natural organizational systems develop from understanding the different varnas and their interdependence on each other. And I'll just finish with a quote, two quotes, that Srila Prabhupada distinguished between a society of Vaishnavas and a society of humans. And he said Vaishnavas are transcendental, liberated devotees who conduct themselves spontaneously in accord with the principles called Sanatana Dharma. And the society of humans are materially conditioned human beings who strictly conduct themselves in obedience to the injunctions of the Vedas under a system called Varnashram Dharma. So if we acknowledge both, as Srila Prabhupada did, and recognize their rightful position, then we can see that actually they're completely are intertwined and can be used. Varnashram can be used as an instrument in attaining the state of Vaishnava. I found this quote in the Uddhava Gita in the 11th chapter, the Bhagavatam. The translation is, "Thus, one who has purified his existence by execution of his prescribed duties, who fully understands me, understands my supreme position, and who's endowed with scriptural and realized knowledge, very soon achieves me." So I really like this quote. It's hard because I spoke it and you can't see it, but it kind of goes through a natural progress of devotional life. And if we understand that Srila Prabhupada was separating, distinguishing between Vaishnava society and the human society, which we both happen to be within, and then we understand this natural progress which he's giving, he's laying out for us, that purification is done through prescribed duties, varnashram, in knowledge of him, which means doing it the way that he prescribed it, as he prescribed the four varnas and ashrams, and is endowed. Endowed means given or done through mercy. So if we're doing these processes, understanding that it's we're not in control, that it's done through mercy, our karma is there, but it's more mercy given. What our varna is, what our ashram is, how everything's working in our life. And then he says through sastra and realization, realized knowledge. So if we understand that we're giving this, that we have varnashram, it's there as a stepping stone, as others were saying, that we're given it through mercy, that we realize it through that we can understand it through sastra, but also through realization. He says, "Very soon achieves me." So it's kind of like our ladder of understanding to get to Krishna. He gives it. He kind of just plainly writes it out for us, so we don't even have to guess. Start with Varnashram, he says. Use Varnashram, and kind of figure it out yourself, the realization, and you can come to me. So that's not all I had, but I'll stop here if you want to ask me questions or comments. It's a bad word. Yeah, I mean, the word carrots, it's difficult. Maybe it was in the context of protection and understanding that the point of that point is that kshatriyas are necessary because they actually are directly caring for the people versus the brahmanas who are indirectly doing this. I mean, brahmanas indirectly are always trying to care for the people and always trying to keep them in knowledge of the absolute truth. Otherwise, there's no point anyways. And the kshatriyas kind of get into the dirty work of it. And in that way, in a sense, are caring more. But it's just a perspective of care, kind of. Kshatriyas are making hospitals, and brahmanas are telling them, you're not this body. It's two different kinds of care. And Vaishnavas, obviously, we're going to try for the higher path, because reaching the higher path, the rest are usually more so taken care of. But it doesn't mean that we don't try to implement the necessary functions of society, because then people aren't taken care of. Because, I mean, often what I think of this, what I think of is when we hear devotees who are saying, you know, I'm having this problem, they say chant Hare Krishna. Okay, so your Brahma, it doesn't seem caring. It's maybe an immature way to think about it, but you don't feel cared for. But that's a completely accurate thing to say. Yes, chant Hare Krishna, that will solve your problems. But at the time, you may need someone who's more willing to get in there and figure it out a bit and, you know, just listen or whatever's necessary. And that's kind of the differentiation. She's not convinced. Yeah, of course, that's not fair to say even devotees. I think what... the context, what we were speaking about, is Varnashram, not Vaishnava Varnashram. So he separated it. Vaishnava system and Varnashram system, human system. So the human system, as we're saying, they're speaking about Brahman, and that's not a personal relationship at all. And I don't know any Brahmanas in this way, and I don't want to assume that they're like this, but they're more aloof from people. But Vaishnavas aren't. They're completely personal with people, and therefore, within each varna, they take another element. They take another perspective. Thank you. Iskon word. Upanayana. Yeah. Mm. Thank you. Yeah, I found the same, that it's probably one of those ISKCON jargons when I was researching, that it's probably like that for us. But we do that with many things, so it's kind of not unusual. Yeah, I mean, Prabhupada, like I said, he separated the two. So Vaishnava is the Upanayana initiation, the sacred thread initiation could be for a sudra. I mean, if I was good at something, that is. But and we're lower than, we understand, I mean, in true humility that we are lower than sudras. So he's giving a sacred thread to those who are not even within the Varanashram system worthy. So we understand there's two ways, and yes, I know. Yeah, the essence is the same for purification. Whether what system we use, it's to the same, and our system's cool by Narada Muni, so it's okay. Yes, sir. That's a really nice point she said. But and I think maybe all initiation is in that way. I don't think many, I know myself, worthy of initiation, but it's kind of like opening the door and saying, okay, I'll let you in and maybe your qualities will come. So the same with the way we say Brahman initiation, that maybe we don't have Brahminical qualities, which are usually parallel to Vaishnava qualities, but Vaishnava is way more. Like I started with, Vaishnava is the hardest, so we're really shooting for the top. And so in the same way, any of the initiations that are received are our mercy, basically. No, I mean, we say we know that Vaishnava means to transcend the modes. There's three modes, and Vaishnavas are not in any of them. No, and that's why Prabhupada distinguished between the two and still implemented it. I found that it's kind of strange. Like, we really understand that we're not this body. I mean, at least we can, in theory, say it and tell everyone. And we understand that the souls inside, and it's a vehicle. But then when it comes to Varanashram, somehow It's like we can't live in a Varnashram body, and all of a sudden it's too difficult or too associated with Vedic culture or something that we don't agree with. But for me, it's just another item of clothing. You know, it's added to the pile. Why not? And you work within it, and knowing it would only be beneficial. So it's in that way, Srila Prabhupada implemented Varnashram. We understand he did not say take Varnashram. So transcending the modes. That's why I finished with that quote. That it's only through mercy. I mean, we can understand that our varna is only given through mercy, good or bad, however you see it. If you understand it as mercy, then obviously it's good. I mean, if we understand in the context that a dancer is a sudra or an artist, I mean, but we don't look at that and think negatively. I mean, it's mercy that these people can depict, you know, these esoteric concepts for us, that we can see it and think, wow, you know, Krishna eats flowers from his friends, you know, things like this. So when you understand a Vaishnava and Varnashram, it's not so difficult to understand, I think. Sorry. Okay. Thank you very much. Sorry. Srila Prabhupada ki jai! Woo!